Have you ever looked at a picture and felt so moved and heartbroken at the same time? I know that I have. I recently saw a picture that brought tears to my eyes. Imagine seeing a woman who is distraught, fingers interlaced with each other, clenching a tissue, with a man standing behind her, his left hand gripping her left arm, his right hand holding her right wrist as if he was holding her up. The man is staring straight into the camera. The woman is staring straight at something lumpy and odd. Your eyes look to what she is looking at. You slowly begin to realize that it is a body. You look around the picture and see what looks like another body covered in the sheet. You realize this picture has been taken at a morgue or a funeral home. That this thing that looks so lumpy and odd is a body. This is the mutilated and deformed body of a 14-year-old Emmett Till. First, let me set the time frame of when this tragic picture was taken. Mid-1950s in the South, Mississippi. Segregation, Jim Crow laws, lynching, and the KKK are prominent. People of color have no rights. They are not allowed to drink from the same fountain, go to the same schools, eat or shop at the same places. They have no rights to vote or hold most jobs. Murders, lynchings, beatings, mobs, riots were all too common. It was standard and normal for people of color to be treated horribly at that time. Emmett Till was just like any other child. Happy and healthy, with a zest for life. He was raised by his mom, Mamie Till, but she did it alone after her and Emmett's father separated. His father was later executed in the military in Italy for misconduct. Since Emmett was an only child of a single mother, he was helpful and diligent in daily tasks to help things run smoothly. In the summer of 1955, Emmett's great uncle, Mose Wright, came for a visit. When he was heading back home to Mississippi, he was going to take one of Emmett's cousins with him to visit other family. Emmett pleaded with his mother to let him go too. She reluctantly put other plans to the side, gave her son his father's ring, and said goodbye at the station. That would be the last time she ever held, kissed, or saw her son alive ever again. Down in Mississippi, Emmett didn't grasp how much worse racism was in the South compared to back home in Chicago. He was considered funny by many friends and family. He liked to joke around a lot. One afternoon, 3 days after arriving in Mississippi, Emmett and his friends went to a store after picking cotton all day. He joked with his friends about having a white girlfriend back home, and the kids dared him to prove it by asking the girl behind the counter for a date. There was no one in the store to share an account of what truly happened on the day that would end Emmett's life. Most people have settled on the act of whistling at a white woman being the catalyst. This woman, Carolyn Bryant, told her husband, Roy Bryant, after he heard things after coming back to town from his work trip. The story, she later recanted, was vastly different than what actually occurred. Roy was in a fit of rage at the thought of a colored boy dare having the courage to whistle at his wife. Roy Bryant got his half-brother, J.W. Millam, to pick him up in the middle of the night for a ride over to the house that Emmett was staying at. The great uncle Mose and his wife begged and pleaded with the men. They said he didn't know what he was doing or they would pay for the damages. None of that worked. They forced him out of bed, out of the house, and into their car, never to be seen alive by his family again. They drove around for hours searching for a spot half-brother Milam had in his head as a good spot to take him and scare him. They ended up back at Milam's house and they took him to the tool house in the back and began whipping him with a 45 pistol. They began to beat him harder and harder. They even gouged his eye out. By this time, they were frustrated that they weren't getting Emmett to cower. They decided to make an example of where people of color stood. They wanted to make him an example people wouldn't forget. They took Emmett to the cotton gin to pick up a 74-pound fan. They traveled all the way back to the river. The river stood 30 yards away from where they parked, and Milam forced Emmett to pick up the fan and carry it to the river. He did. They told him to undress. He did. They argued at the riverbank and saw they still weren't getting what they wanted from this kidnapping and beating, and they shot Emmett Till in the face. They tied barbed wire around him with the fan attached and dumped him in the river. Emmett's body was found 3 days later in the river by boys who were fishing in the Tallahatchie River. His body was so mutilated, the only way he was identifiable was the very ring his mother gave Emmett before he left for Mississippi. Mose had to come down to the identification. Authorities wanted to have him buried quickly down in the Mississippi. She refused and demanded her son to be brought to Chicago to be buried. Mamie was back in Chicago with her son's body. She decided to have an open casket funeral. She wanted a very public funeral. Mamie wanted the world to see that those men, to see what those men had done to her sweet baby boy. She, like many other African Americans, were fed up with the mistreatment, segregation, attitudes, slavery, beatings, and murders of those of color. With this decision, Mamie selflessly made having to live through the horror, seeing her son time and time again. She unknowingly began the civil rights movement for the large majority. When Mamie decided to have the open casket funeral, she also decided to invite Jet Magazine to publish an article with pictures of her mutilated son. The magazine shared the photos and the story of Emmett Till's brutal kidnapping and murder. This story spread from publication to publication until it was nationally known. People followed the trial where the men were acquitted for the murder, where a grand jury refused to indict Roy and J.W. of kidnapping. They read the tell-all that the men sold to Look magazine for $4,000. People were rightfully upset about the horrific beating and murder. People wanted to take action. This injustice was the straw that broke the camel's back. Just 100 short days after Emmett's murder came the day for Rosa Parks to take a stand. She was told to move to the back of the bus for a white passenger. "I thought about Emmett Till, and I couldn't go back," said Rosa Parks, and the reference to why she chose to stay put. This sparked the Montgomery bus boycott, which lasted 361 days. It helped deem the segregation was unconstitutional on the bus, which led to the African Americans fighting for their right to go to the desegregated schools. Little Rock Nine was just yet another part of this movement that was snowballing out of control in the best of ways. The Southern Christian Leadership Conference was formed by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. to be one of the best nonviolent organizations to fight for rights. Sit-ins, speeches, boycotts, marches, they all helped fight this war of mistreatment and violence. It was time for racism and discrimination to end. It was time for people of color to no longer be treated as less than due to their color of the skin. All of this was change that was so desperately needed. This boy should not have been beaten and murdered for whistling at a white woman in a store. This horrific act of evil was sadly not the first, nor was it the last. This woman lost her only son over the action of whistling at a white woman who was dared by friends to prove a point. His life was stolen by men who took his life to try and prove that they were right, that they, as white men, were better than a colored boy. Sadly, Emmett became a hero in his own right because he became the driving force in the movement. A movement for peace, for freedom, for justice, for rights. No one should have ever been killed. No one should be killed past, present, or the future for any reason, much less the color of their skin.